Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and of course, my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil. Hi, Robbie.
Yeah. We need like a house band.
Yeah,
for this show.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Let's just talk about how excited you are about your little studio, your new little podcast.
I am so excited about it. Yeah. So, you know, because we've been moving.
Right.
Like from, you know, Utah, I'm traveling so much. You know, I had my microphone and my things and I had a ring light like every, you know, streamer person gets these days. But it just was like it was reflecting my glasses all the time. I had wires everywhere.
Yeah.
It was always a pain in the butt. And now, thanks to my lovely wife, Rebecca, and her creating this, she ordered these like foam sound insulating things that she mounted onto cardboard that is placed all around me. We got these lights on stands with a remote. There's the remote for my lights so they don't reflect and they're very, oh, it's just, I love this. It's a studio now. It's awesome.
You are so ecstatic and euphoric and in love.
I really am.
You are in love right now.
I am.
Right?
With my studio.
With your studio.
Yeah.
Nice. Wow. Well, you know, that makes me a little jealous to know that you've got all these extra things there. And I haven't gotten any sound reducing foam, but maybe I don't need it as much. I don't sound very echoey for you.
No, don't sound echoey. Okay. Our new place here is, you know,
super
it's
echoey.
Like marble floors and hard surfaces everywhere. It was very echoey. And
yes.
So I felt like I had to do something.
I'm going to say right now, I'm going to go on a limb and say this, that when it comes to the world of podcasters, all the podcasters out there, I would venture to say that we are the most nomadic of probably anyone else out there. Am I right?
We move around a bit. Yeah, you travel all the time.
I'm traveling. You're traveling. Yeah. Yes, right? I mean, I don't know. Yeah, most podcasters, they live in one city and they podcast from that city from their home. You split time between Vancouver, Salt Lake, and at one point Atlanta, myself, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Calgary. So we always have three locations that we're jumping around to practically, right?
I love it. I love it.
So that's just who we are. This week's episode is Day of Honor. Say no more. Close your mouth. Yes. Just say the title only. We won't go any further than that.
Oh my
Day
gosh.
Of Honor.
Okay. All right. Okay. So this week's episode is Day of Honor. We are going to go watch it, Garrett and I. We're going to make our notes and we are going to come back and tell everybody our thoughts on Day of Honor. See you soon.
See ya. All right, everybody, we are back from watching Day of Honor, and I stand corrected. I did not think this was the exterior space floating
this
moment.
This was the floating in the spacesuits. Hey. I thought I remembered that being the I Love You episode.
God, I really thought that was later. I did not think it happened at this point in the
game.
And
as soon as you told me, oh, no, I don't think it's the space thing. I'm like, well, then maybe it's the cave Batleth thing. But it's not even that.
No. There is a cave. You're right about that. But that's the holographic program, right, that you helped design with Torres. All right. So let's just start off. This is written by Jerry Taylor. This is directed. Is this Jesus's
by
first?
By the way. No, it's Jesus'
second episode. Okay.
It's his second episode because he directed, I want to say, Fair Trade.
Okay.
I think he did Fair Trade in season three.
Uh-huh.
Jesus had directed DS9 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how we got him on Voyager.
Okay.
So he had directed some DS9 episodes.
So he cut his Trek teeth on DS9 and then came off to Voyager. And let's give him the proper credit. His full name is Jesus Salvador Trevino. So that is the full name of Jesus, who, again, really wonderful guy. We really enjoyed working with him.
I loved Jesus.
So calm, so competent, very calm. So relaxed about everything, right? So,
And I think that my memory is that with Jesus, that he had been an editor. He came from post-production.
Yes, that's right. That rings a bell too.
Way back in the day.
Yeah.
And he had been in post-production and started as an editor and then became a director. And he was just always a very calming influence. He was very, very easy to work with. I thought his direction was very smart and point. And and also he lived down in Venice Beach, where I lived.
Oh.
So he was like kind of a neighbor.
I see.
So I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
He was old school LA. Jesus, awesome guy. So we loved Jesus. We loved him at the time. We loved him. He directed a lot of episodes and I learned a lot from him. He was a very smart, very wise director.
Let's talk about some of the guest stars real quick. Alan Altschuld.
Alan plays Loomis.
Loomis.
Plays Loomis.
Yeah.
Yes, by the way, I want to say right now, and I'll bring it up again, the makeup for these Qatarian. Are they Qatarian?
They're called Qatadi.
Qatadi, thank you. Mm-hmm. The Qatadi makeup was phenomenal, I think.
Really good.
Between the hands, the extended hands, the detail to the sort of dinosaur-like face, I thought the makeup department did a phenomenal job.
And what's cool though, Robbie, I'm going to interrupt you, is that when we first see the Qatadi spokesperson on screen, who is, I think, Loomis at the time, right?
Yes, that's Alan Altschuld.
That's Alan Altschuld in the cockpit on the view screen. You only see him dead on. Not until later do you see
the hands
and a profile of that alien makeup, which is completely got all these extra dimensions.
Oh, it's great.
Levels going on. Very complex makeup, looking quite good, actually. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And then we have Michael Krawick, who is listed as what's the name that we have? What do you have for him?
I don't have a note for that, but
he's another, this is where it gets
he's
confusing.
Another Qatadi.
He's another Qatadi. And
because that makeup was so good.
Yeah.
I thought it was the same guy in both the beginning and the end, but I think we had two different Qatadi in there.
Right. Because he's Ramen. Okay. So there's Loomis and Ramen, like the noodle, but
I made a note of that, by the way. It was like noodles?
I don't know. It was just confusing because I thought it was Newman or something like that. I couldn't hear.
Ramen.
A lot of times it's hard to hear whenever they say who they are. It's just hard to hear what they're saying and make out. But evidently there's two different Qatadi, the one on screen and then one later that comes into the briefing room, or maybe the one that comes to get the technology at the end.
So there's some confusion them at the end.
So there's a little confusion of Alan's character and Michael's character.
Here's the thing. That makeup is so good.
Yeah.
It's so specific that I just assumed it was one guy.
Same guy. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And we have Mr. Kevin P. Stilwell, who portrays the Klingon in the holodeck program that Paris helps Torres program for her Day of Honor ritual. So Kevin P. Stilwell there. So that's our shout out to all of our guest actors, which is something that we should do more of, Robbie.
We should
really talk about these guys because they deserve it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Can we start with our synopsis?
I just want to say one last thing. Jerry Taylor wrote the script.
Yes.
And I did not realize that Jerry Taylor was still writing scripts in season 4. I thought by then she had sort of stepped away.
Oh.
So that she was more of a consultant on our show and not an actual, day-to-day screenwriter. But she wrote the script.
Could this be her final script that she wrote for Voyager? Possibly.
It might be. I don't know. We can look into that. But But I did, as we watched this after I watched this episode, I looked up a few things. I know that she was very invested in taking the Tom and B'Elanna relationship to a new level. She thought they had been dancing around it for too long.
Yeah.
She felt they needed to come out and be explicit and just embrace it. And I know Brandon Braga and some of the other writers had been more cautious and wanted to stay away from it. So I'm really glad that Jerry pushed for this script in the way that it plays out. I thought it was great.
Well, playing off of the last episode where Kes gave the gift to Voyager of the closer proximity to home, now Jerry Taylor gives the gift of the relationship, or the okay, the stamp of approval for Paris and Torres to be a couple now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's do our synopsis.
Let me get to my limerick.
Right. I think we start with haiku, right? So, okay.
Always haiku first. Yeah,
you find your limerick. Tell me when you're ready and I'll start my haiku.
I am ready.
Because every time you tap your phone, your whole screen bounces. The screen bounces all over the place. Right. Yeah. It looks like there's an earthquake in Vancouver. Okay. Yeah. Here we go. My haiku for Day of Honor. Seven wants to work. B'Elanna's worst day ever. Katati are jerks.
I like it. That's the thing about a haiku, is it's just right to the point.
So to the point.
It's
just
very,
the essence.
It's the essence. Okay, here we go with our limerick. Our limerick for Day of Honor.
I can't wait.
B'Elanna's quite grumpy, doesn't like the Day of Honor. Then the warp core's ejected. The trip home could be longer. When Tom and B'Elanna float in space, they share big feelings and an awkward embrace.
Uh-huh.
Now they both have some things to ponder.
Wow. I thought you were already done with it. I jumped in a little too early. Wow.
You did jump in a little too early.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in that one.
There's a limerick is much more complex, as you
really
is. Remember. Yeah.
It really is. I was a little confused because I thought the first two lines are supposed to rhyme. How does it go?
Yes.
Isn't it?
B'Elanna's quite grumpy, doesn't like the Day of Honor.
Okay.
Then the warp core is ejected. The trip home could be longer.
Oh, okay. Because I thought
Tom and B'Elanna float in space, they share big feelings and an awkward embrace.
Yes.
Now they both have some new things to ponder.
Very good. I like it.
Yeah, the limerick, as you remember, you used to spend, I got text from you saying, I'm not ready. I need
hours. That would take me so much more time.
And hours and hours.
At least another hour minimum just to do the limerick.
For the limerick only.
But you know, you have the assistance of RJ, Rebecca, and she really...
And
she
by assistance, you mean
out of the air.
You mean basically she's doing.
She's basically doing most of it.
She's
yes.
not doing them, but maybe she is.
Good job, okay. Rebecca. Okay. No, it's really good.
All okay, right, here we go.
Let's start it up.
We start in Cargo Bay, and there's Seven coming out of the another slow film version of. There's Cargo Bay. There's Seven in the sexy outfit. She's a Borg. It was just, I felt this time like, all right, we've seen this moment before.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I'm tired of seeing Seven. Yeah, Seven's a Borg, and she's in a skin-tight outfit. I get it.
Yeah.
But we do it again, and then she wakes up, and there's Chakotay. And she basically says to Chakotay, I need a duty assignment because I'm lonely. I'm used to being with a whole collective, and I need to connect with people. I'm feeling lonely.
You just said duty.
I said duty.
You sure did.
Duty.
Yes. I do now remember the name for what she regenerates it. It's a Borg regeneration alcove. I couldn't remember that last episode. I'm like, why do you say that dang thing? It's an alcove. Okay.
It's an alcove.
Yeah. So she wants a duty assignment from Chakotay. Yes.
Yes, she does. She's all lonely, right. But that makes total sense. Like, And it's a wonderful little subliminal setup for the whole episode, really, about connection, about a human experience of feeling connected.
And,
and Tom and B'Elanna play that in the love story, and
and
it plays out in lots of great ways.
I'm okay with the sort of slow push in. I know we've already done it. We showed her in all her magnificence. I know we've seen that, and I'm okay with it. Let's just see in successive episodes if they keep hitting on that over and over again, then I'll be bored. I mean, you're already kind of tired of it, but I'm kind of tired of it right now.
But yeah, I feel like this is it. Like, let's not do this beat again. We know she sleeps in an alcove.
Yes.
We know she's an ex-Borg. I get it. It's but don't spend a lot of time on it.
Got it.
All right. So we go to engineering and Vorik is there. We haven't seen him for a long time.
No.
Vorik is there. He's fixing a leak in some kind of coupling or something.
Yeah.
And B'Elanna is really irritated.
You're right.
She's snapping at him.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, come on, fix this thing.
She's having a bad day. Yeah.
Obviously. She's having a bad day already. You can tell.
But we know what we do remember the last time we saw Vorek, or at least you should. You were fighting for the love of your woman with,
which by the way,
with Vorek.
By the way, let me say, like,
actually, you didn't fight. She fought. Excuse me. Yeah.
But by the way, shouldn't there be some awkwardness with Vorek and B'Elanna? Like, that's one thing I missed in this episode. I'm like, wait a minute. Vorek just had the Ponfar last time. Mm-hmm. Saw him, and that was a big deal. And now they're just acting like, oh, they're just coworkers.
Agreed.
Like, where's the awkward Ponfar?
Agreed.
Yeah, I would definitely have
been some awkwardness. There was no tracking whatsoever of that awkwardness. No. That they literally fought to the death. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Almost killing each other.
Yeah.
And now they're okay with it, I guess. I don't know. Taurus is a bad news. She's snappy with Vorek. Paris asks about their Paris shows up and he asked about their dinner plans. Are we still going out tonight?
Mm-hmm.
And then he asked, hey, are you gonna be still going through with that Day of Honor ritual? And that's when she says, nah, I've decided against it. Which Paris is not too happy about, because clearly he spent time helping her develop this program, you know. But he's like, okay, all right, she's had a bad day. I can tell that she's not having anything, you know.
Well, she says, like, I had a sentimental moment where I thought maybe I'd do some of this, but you know what? Nah, I decided I'm having a bad day. I don't want to do it.
Right.
And I like Paris's line. He's like, oh, well, I wouldn't want to get too sentimental.
Yes.
It's already setting up, like, you know, she doesn't want to deal with feelings. And he's being sarcastic. And
if you think of it, she does enumerate everything that's happened to her. Right. It starts off with waking up late, which is already the biggest worst thing to have happen. If you have a duty assignment that you have to appear for, then the sonic shower malfunctions, then she misses breakfast. And now she's not hungry. She's hangry. Right. Angry and hungry together, because she also says
that a couple of people were sick in engineering. Yes. She had to cover.
Deal with
and
that.
By the way, Rebecca said in that moment, we're watching it and she's like, wait a minute, two people are sick. Why is anybody sick? Like, you're Star Trek. Like, they just go to sick bay, get a hypo spray. Like, oh, I'm feeling kind of nauseous. Okay. Psh, have a hypo spray. Like, honestly, that's
that was using 20th century mindset into writing this script, the dialogue for this script.
Nobody
right?
would be just sick.
Yes.
Like, either they're dead or they're working.
Sure.
But nobody calls in sick.
Yes.
I mean, that's an interesting thing about Starfleet. If you think about it, like in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're either dead or you're working. There's no sick days anymore.
That's right. And plus, we have no outside influences to catch any viruses from, really. You know, I mean, everyone's kind of in the same ship and hanging out with each other. Yeah. Right. So, So there's some question marks there. Some holes in the script. OK.
Yeah.
But all these things together kind of puts her into this mood that she's in. And I love your line when you're walking out of engineering to Chakotay. Be careful. You know, you're like warning him. Right.
So Chakotay comes into engineering and he tells B'Elanna, he says, I've talked to Seven and she's feeling like she needs some kind of purpose or job here. She wants to work in engineering. B'Elanna says, absolutely not. In fact, B'Elanna says at this point, the transwarp technology is too dangerous. We shouldn't be playing with that.
Yeah, which we have no experience.
True, by the way.
Yeah.
Because we freaking eject a warp core. Like, B'Elanna's right here. Chakotay goes, nope. And in fact, she calls him naive, I think.
Yeah.
And
and
he says, you know what, Lieutenant? He goes, this is an order. Seven's doing it.
Yeah.
And so
He pulls rank on her.
He pulls rank, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let me jump into the next one. Janeway's ready room. We're now in Janeway's ready room. Janeway is talking to Seven and she says, you know what? That name, Seven of Nine, it's just a little too cumbersome is the word she used. And so she suggests, how about just using Seven? And
well, actually, first she suggests Annika.
What about your given name? Sorry.
What about the human name? And she's like, nope.
And she's like, nope, I've never even known myself to be, you know, she has no recollection of being even called that name. Mm-hmm. So it's no good for her. So then she suggests Seven and she says, well, it's, what does she say? It's inaccurate, but efficient, but sufficient.
Yes,
that's what it is. Yeah, it's sufficient. Yeah. I want to start using that in real life. Sufficient, you know.
It's sufficient.
It's sufficient.
That'll be sufficient.
All right. Now we're on the bridge. There's a ship approaching. It's damaged, yes, but functional. And it's damaged, the Katati. Right.
And there are several dozen life signs. And mm-hmm. it's all very... And then this character comes on the view screen and he introduces himself. He says, "I'm Ramen." And I was like, I made a note, noodles?
Oh, you
ramen noodles? Is that, you know, they have to make up a lot of alien names.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Ramen just, you know, they were just out of names and they decided to go with Ramen noodles.
Or Jerry Taylor was in the kitchen on her laptop tapping away and she looked over at something over on this left and it was a package of ramen noodles and she thought, perfect, ramen.
Perfect, ramen. Yeah. Ramen is the
ramen
name.
Yeah. This species has been mostly decimated by the assimilation by the Borg. Only a few thousand escaped. Millions of Katati used to be alive, right?
Yes, proud and accomplished people, mm-hmm. he said.
Yeah.
And they're very embarrassed by the situation.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, it's and very sad.
You know, what's so funny is that every time we come across an alien race, they always say, "We were a very proud and accomplished race." Like, nobody ever says, "We were very cowardly and we did nothing." You know, in our history, we're basically the slackers of the Delta Quadrant. No one has said that to us yet.
No, not yet.
But they asked for food, supplies, and thorium isotopes from us. And Janeway's like, "Okay, all right, sounds good."
And they're very sympathetic, by the way. This it's very, and this is the first time I saw this makeup watching the episode. And I got to say again, I thought the makeup department did a phenomenal job. This was one of my favorite alien makeups. It just looked, the way the actor wore it, it just looked very authentic in a non-human way. I thought it was very cool.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I was going to say, it gives me the heebie-jeebies a little bit because there is a segment of the population that can't look at things that have holes in it. Mm-hmm. I think it's trichophobia or something is the name of it, but that makeup has all these holes and gaps in it. So it was kind of hard for me to look at. Even I was impressed by it, yes. And I said,
but uncomfortable.
But uncomfortable, yes.
Interesting. Yes. Well, I found the actor's speech pattern to be slightly uncomfortable, I got to say. It was very sort of halted and broken.
Yeah.
Rhythm. I don't know if that was direction. I don't know if that was, I'm not sure where that came from, but I found that a little distracting. I got to be honest.
I liked it. I thought it was just, it added a little, you know, a different element to it. And I felt whether it was Jesus's idea or that particular actor, I don't know. But to me, you know, it kind of changed things a little bit. I didn't mind it so much.
Yeah, it was a little distracting to me, but I appreciate the effort to do something non-human in all the ways. I thought that was pretty cool.
Right.
So we go to engineering, and this is where I made a big note. Like, why aren't B'Elanna and Vorik more awkward? Like, they're working together on this transwarp technology, and they're trying to incorporate some of the Borg technology and this transwarp technology into the warp drive. And B'Elanna and Seven have a lot of friction, but I'm like, why aren't B'Elanna and Vorik sort of a little more awkward? I don't know. That bothered me that we didn't track that.
Well, probably because she's so busy being mean to Seven. And she's, I don't recall her being this mean. I was like, oh my goodness.
No, she was pretty nasty.
She's calling her out. Like, do you have any feelings of remorse regarding the Katati and any other species that you've assimilated? I mean, she's so pissed off about
this. She does, like, not want Seven.
What?
There.
Yeah.
And okay. Seven gets it, and Seven's like, "I'm gonna go back to my alcove, and wait for this everything just you know, all this computer stuff to catch up." And
I'm going back to my Borg crib. I'll be gone. I'll see you in a bit. Yes.
But part of it is B'Elanna's grumpy mood. Like, she's having a bad awful day,
That's
and she's
true.
Taking it out on Seven a little. It's a little amplified here.
She's taking it out on everybody. Correct. She's already taken it out a bit on you, on Chakotay, on Vorik, definitely. And now Seven gets the brunt of it. Right.
Yeah.
So everyone's getting a little bit of it.
Yeah. So we go to the mess hall and Neelix brings some blood pie. He's so happy to bring some blood pie over
for Day of Honor, which is
a traditional sort of holiday. The Day of Honor is kind of like, I read a little bit about Jerry Taylor after we watched this. Hmm. Jerry Taylor talked about the Jewish holiday of Yom Kippur and sort of looking back at, at how you had behaved that year and seeing if you could do anything differently, if you could make amends or if you had any regrets or things. Yom Kippur is a Jewish holiday. And so Day of Honor is sort of a version of that in the Klingon mythology.
Interesting. What did that blood pie look like to you? I'm curious.
It looked like a sassafras pie or something.
Oh,
okay. It looked kind of reddish, like a fruit pie to me. It didn't, that's what I saw.
Okay. What I saw was roasted red pepper hummus.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
I was thinking more like an apple, like sassafras or some kind of red root of some kind, root beer or whatever that is.
Or maybe a beet pie or something with a little redness.
Maybe something with some redness.
Pumpkin. Yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. All right. Cool. Well, she refuses it. She's like, no, I'm not going to go through with this Day of Honor thing. And she's also a little bit surprised and annoyed that Neelix even knows about this, mm-hmm. So she's not, again, in a bad mood. And then he sits her down and says, look, I know you have a temper and I'm going to offer you this gift.
Let me be your pressure valve
to blow off steam, basically a punching bag. Right. So come here and call me names and this and that, and I'll be okay with it.
He says, call me names, insult me, question my parentage.
And then I love when she's like, that's the nicest offer anyone's ever made me. Yeah.
That's the nicest offer I've had in a very long time.
Yeah. So Klingon of her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Say that. But then, she does ask for his advice on whether or not she should go through with this Day of Honor mm-hmm. ritual. And, he kind of convinces her, being the morale officer. And so she decides to do it and she begins to eat the blood pie, which that reaction did not look very good when she took bite.
Yeah, she didn't seem like she liked the pie. Mm-mm. But he says, I think traditions are good.
Yeah.
And I think family traditions are worth preserving. And she says something about, the rituals my mom taught me don't seem so hateful now that we're here in the Delta, like being far away.
Yeah.
Sometimes a little distance, that moment resonated for me, a little distance from maybe the things that I was taught as a kid or, some of the traditions that I grew up with.
Yeah.
When I have a little distance from it, things that I rejected when I was younger, mm-hmm. but I have a little distance and I kind of go, oh, maybe I see why that was a tradition. Maybe.
Right.
Maybe, I kind of softened the thing. So I definitely connected to that idea that as you have some distance, you can appreciate things,
mm-hmm.
And he also touches her hand. There's a moment where Neelix reaches over and kind of touches her, physically touches her. And I thought that was a nice detail because mm-hmm. she softens there. And
there's not a lot of scenes with those two together, with just those two. So that to me was sort of like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I like this because I always like to see every variation of the series regulars together, every single variation, because it just adds a little variety, a little spice to life. And now we see this mm-hmm. combination of Neelix and Torres.
So next we go to the caves. We jump to the caves. We're obviously on the holodeck. Stage 16, our classic cave set, Planet Hell. And there's B'Elanna's walking in mm-hmm. and there's a Klingon there who says, are you ready? Are you willing?
Yeah.
And he starts going through the list of things that she's going to have to do. She's going to have to eat the heart of a sanctified Targ. Mm-hmm. And so he offers her this piece of food, I guess, mm-hmm. which is part of the Targ heart. And he says, this is going to bring you courage for the rest of this ceremony.
Yeah.
So she does eat it. And then he hands her a drink the Moklas.
Moklak.
Yes, yeah. Moklak, which is to honor Kalis, who built an empire. And the greatest Klingon warrior, Kalis. And then he says, so what have you done, B'Elanna? What have you done to distinguish yourself? And you can see that she's not feeling good. She can't point to something that she is proud of, that she feels like she's done something to distinguish herself.
No. Can I rewind for a second?
Yeah, sure.
On the entrance of Kevin Stillwell's character,
yes,
the Klingon that comes in to debrief her. So he says the typical Klingon greeting, which is kapla, but he doesn't pronounce it like that. He says kupla. So, and I sat there going,
really?
Wow, yes. And I thought, why didn't they catch that? I mean, I'm really shocked that nobody, like if I was on set, I would have said, hey, guys, it's kapla, not kupla. It's like he made it oosa. And then I thought, okay, well, maybe there are variations of how you pronounce things because, you know, in the United States, you have different accents depending on what part of the country you're from. So maybe on the Klingon home world, he's from a very northern part of the Klingon home world. And they say kupla instead of kapla. So I don't know. Right. But
no,
that did kind of.
I think that it's just that maybe Jesus and maybe the other people on set were not tracking that. And because there's no writers there.
Yeah.
You know, to catch that.
Yeah. But they could have caught it looping. They could have caught it in looping
later, but they
didn't do it there. You have a couple of chances to correct, you know, incorrect pronunciations, and it wasn't. And then, where did you take it? So she drank the matlock, and then he then says, now, here are the rituals. The first one, the ritual of 20 pain sticks, and then combat with a Batleth master. And then you must traverse the sulfur lagoons of Gorath. So there's these three things. And then, of course,
these scary things. Yeah. And she's like, nah, you know what? Never mind. I'm out of here. And she tries to leave. And then suddenly he grabs her.
Yeah.
And there's some other Klingons show up.
Yeah.
It's like, then, where did they come from?
Well, there was one other guy earlier because he hands her the Heart of Targ, right? Because like he goes, first you must eat the Heart of Targ. And the guy comes off screen from nowhere.
She has a quick fight scene and bam, bam, bam. They're all down. And she beats them all, and she's like, I'm out of here.
But she does get hit with the pain sticks a few times.
Yeah, she
does. Because I know Megan was like, wow, she cried. I mean, she yelped, you know, her sounds that she's making while she's being tortured are quite realistic. They're pretty good, you know. Yeah. She does a good job of getting hurt or sounding like she's getting hurt.
Suffering.
Like, yeah. Her sounds of suffering are beautiful.
You did
perfect.
Suffering,
yeah.
Garrett.
You did. I did, too. I suffered well.
You did.
Yes. And that's why I felt that Kim and Torres could have suffered well together. But it's okay. It's okay. I understand.
It's never going to happen after this episode.
Not after this episode.
Ain't
happening. It's not
happening.
That's right. I know. It's so sad.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So she leaves the holodeck simulation.
Yeah.
And of course we find her later in her quarters. That's when Paris comes in and
Paris starts cleaning up. He starts
folding
laundry.
A piece of clothing. So I don't know what is going on there. Also, I am not a fan of either Harry or Tom's hair in this episode. I don't know something weird is going on with Tom's hair in this scene. It didn't look like the normal Tom's hair that I'm used to. So
I didn't
it
think
bothered
like
me.
Tom's makeup looked the same too. I looked very puffy and like I had like bags under my eyes. It was very strange.
Yeah, it was puffier. And then why are you folding her clothing? I mean, maybe that's a nervous reaction that you have. that Tom
maybe
has.
It was like a tender, like, hey, let me take care of you.
Yeah.
He comes in trying to, you know, trying to be supportive and helpful.
Oh, okay.
I get the folding, you know. No,
okay.
Up
All
stuff.
Right. That makes sense. That makes sense.
Because she's kind of made a mess of the place. And he's
I'll buy that.
Trying to calm it, you know.
I'll buy that.
Things together. Mm-hmm. But here's what I didn't like. I start yelling at her.
Well, no, she started yelling at you, though.
Well, she starts yelling, but then I start yelling back, and I just wish, like, Paris got really easily butthurt in the scene. I was just like, why is he getting so sensitive? Like, she's the one that's having a bad, awful day. He should just lighten up about it. I don't know. I felt like at the end of that scene, Paris was the jerk. Because she's having a bad, awful day, and I don't care if she's being, like, snappy or whatever. I should have just been cooler. And played it a little cooler. So
I don't know, yeah, man. I mean, you already had to deal with her in engineering.
Yeah.
Tom already had to deal with her
clearly
in engineering.
Clearly, they had a dinner date and he had helped her. And
it's building. I think it's building. And so, I think your anger or your voice volume being higher was justified. But if you see it as being, it did pull you out a little
bit. I wish
bit.
I
it
could
annoyed
have been
you,
a little
right?
calmer about
okay.
it. Like
you would have tweaked a little
less.
Bit.
Yeah, a little less taking it personally.
Yeah. So. You could have been firm, but not yelling at her, right?
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Makes sense. Okay.
But yeah, they he's like, you know what? Forget it. Like, you're a jerk and you're pissed off and you're being a jerk. So forget it. And so they have a little fight. We go to the ready room. Again, this alien makeup I thought was amazing. Really different.
Briefing room now. Briefing room, not the ready room.
Briefing room, yep. Mm-hmm. And we see the hands. He's begging for help.
Mm-hmm.
Neelix sticks up for Voyager, has a moment where Neelix is like, you know what? These people are very generous. And if we gave stuff to everybody, like they'd have nothing. And they have to also think of themselves. And Janeway says, thanks, Neelix. But you know what? I'm going to give these guys stuff. I'm going to give them what they're asking for.
Yeah.
We kind of have this nice moment of Janeway.
Yeah.
Clearly sacrificing things that are, you know, putting our crew at risk, but she's willing to do it. She's making a very kind gesture.
Yeah. Now this is Loomis, right? This isn't yes. Raman. This is Loomis now, I think, in this room.
I think it's gotta be Loomis right? still. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Well, Raman was the first person we see, and then now Loomis.
Yes. Okay. Yes. This is. Yeah, I think this is Loomis.
The other character.
The other guy.
I just, my notes were, look, he's trying to guilt us into giving supplies.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's like, what the heck? I mean, you guys are, as desperate as you are, you should be grateful for anything that anybody can provide you guys. But no, he didn't care. Not at all.
No, he was like, well, looks to me like you guys are living the life of luxury here. Mm-hmm. Like, this looks pretty fancy compared to us. And
Yeah,
that's when Neelix sticks up. It's a nice scene, but I particularly like that Janeway went above and beyond being generous.
She did. She didn't have to do that, but she did.
Yeah. We go to the hallway. We see Paris and Seven walking, which I didn't have a lot of scenes with Jerry Ryan.
Right.
So
very rare. I was shocked. I was like, oh, look,
yeah,
they're together.
Very rare that Paris and Seven were together. And this was very early on, which was a weird scene to me, I got to say.
Okay.
Because he was sort of written a little extra friendly. And I was like, is that because they didn't know if B'Elanna and Paris were going to be together and they wanted Paris and Seven to potentially have it? I don't know. It was a strange, because he's got these lines like, you know, if you ever need somebody.
I wrote it down. Here's your line. If there's any way. Let me do it in your voice. Hold on.
Yes.
If there's any way that I can help you adjust to your life here on Voyager, please ask me. So that's what you say. And the way you say it is almost flirtatious, you know?
That's what I'm
and
saying.
Then when you walk away, she gives you an eyebrow raise, like she just checked you out. And I'm like, what is happening right here? Yeah.
So she has no idea that B'Elanna and Tom are the shit.
My issues with this scene begin with Tuvok is walking Loomis down the hallway.
Randomly down the
hall.
And
he's like, and what about her? What is she? And he's like, oh, well, she's human who used to be Borg. You didn't have to tell him that. You didn't have to go there.
Especially when you know
that
the Borg destroyed, like,
their entire existence.
Tuvok should have been smarter than
Tuvok just stuck his Vulcan foot in his Vulcan mouth. And I was like, what are you doing?
Awkward, like, you know, running into them and then having Tuvok sort of awkwardly drag him away.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't love that scene.
Yeah. And the blocking, he's grabbing his arm and then you grab Seven's arm. But this is when I noticed, look how big your hand is in relation to her torso, her arm. And I just, I don't recall Jeri Ryan having that slender of a torso. I mean, she has a very slender arm.
It's not about
slender
Jerry,
upper
Garrett,
torso.
It's about the it's the masculinity of these hands. it's the strength and the power of these hands. No, I'm yeah, I noticed the same thing.
Do you know what I'm saying? Do you recall
notice
being
my
that
hand
slender?
Sort of grab her arm to whisk her away to safety, like I was her personal bodyguard or something.
Right.
Yes, it just felt like we were setting up something more than friends, which I found to be awkward.
Very perplexed by that.
Scene. Agreed.
I'm like, where are you guys going with this? Okay.
Yeah, it just was a weird, especially in this episode of all places. It's like.
And
really?
You know what else didn't track? After you tell her, look, I'm there for whatever you need, you walk away from her. But the next scene, you're both in engineering. So clearly you're both heading to engineering to kind of do this test on this transwarp conduit. Yep. And so then why the heck are you walking ahead of her and leaving her? It did not track whatsoever. Because the next time you see it, everybody, you're in engineering. And
we're in engineering in the next scene.
Yes.
And Paris is supposed to be there observing. And Taurus and Vorik and Seven are all.
And you're right next to Seven.
Trying to test. And we're supposed to. And they're testing the transwarp modifications on the on the warp core. Mm-hmm. And Janeway is, on the comm. And she's like, all right, let's get this to warp two. We get we kind of start things going, testing this transwarp modification.
Yeah.
And then they initiate this test and the tachyon matrix starts malfunctioning.
It starts leaking into the warp core. Leaking,
right?
Big problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a transwarp corridor or something. We have to open the transwarp corridor.
Yeah.
And we're trying to achieve speeds faster than normal warp with this warp technology, but obviously it starts to break down. The warp core starts to melt down, basically. There's a tachyon leak or something. Yeah,
that's right.
And B'Elanna's like, we've got to eject the warp core. Like she's
says, we have to evacuate engineering, right? She sends everybody out except, and Seven's like, no, I can help. She says, no, get out. And then you go, I can help. And she's like, get out. And then you go, no, I outrank you. And I thought, wait a minute. Paris is lieutenant junior grade. Torres is full lieutenant. How do you outrank her? I don't understand that. No. So dun, dun, dun. Did you just figure that out yourself?
I just brain faked her out. I don't know. I don't know what I did. You're right. I don't outrank her. No, not at all.
To use Star Wars terminology, you used a Jedi mind trick on her.
I just Jedi mind tricked her.
Yes, you did. Oh, my Lord.
I did. Yeah, okay. They stay and try to fix it together, but it doesn't work. And they have to run and escape. And as they're running out, Torres is ejecting the warp core, which we've never done on our show.
It's very sad that we had
to do that. It's very sad. We're ejecting the warp core. What?
We're like, basically ejecting the engine of our vehicle. You know, it's like, see ya. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. This is the worst day. In fact, she says, this is the worst day of her life.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so now we're in the shuttle because Janeway has basically told Paris and Torres to be in a shuttle together to go get that warp core back, you know, go find it. And so now this is they give each other these sideways glances like, oh, great. Now we've got to spend time together in the shuttle together after we've argued. But they arrive at the ejected warp core and they realize, guess what? The Katati are here and they're trying to tractor beam this warp core for themselves.
Yeah.
So Torres tries to disrupt the tractor beam with a particle beam and it's working.
And they warn the shuttle. They're like, back off. Don't do this.
We're going to fire on you. Yep. So then they send an antimatter pulse back through our particle beam, which then starts affecting the structural integrity of the shuttle.
And
hull breach imminent. Yep.
Paris is like, we got to get out of here. They go to the back.
Yep.
We cut outside for a minute to space. We come back a second later and they're already in their spacesuits. We got in the spacesuits pretty fast.
You are quick changers.
We are really quick changers.
And but the distress call doesn't work, right? So you're like, let's call, send a distress call to Voyager before we beam out. But if communications are down, comms are down, and they beam out in their environmental suits.
Yep.
Gone. Yep. They watch the shuttle explode. And then even in space, when there's a possibility that you may not be rescued, you're still being Tom Paris. When she says, when you, Torres says to you, let me access your controls. And you say, I thought you'd never ask. Yes, ma'am, kind of a thing, right?
And she's like, do you have to do this?
Yes.
Like, then, can't you?
Then I write down, you guys do a weird space dance. Like, somehow you guys have to do this rumba in order for you to hand her your forearm to touch the buttons.
It was interesting watching this. I thought Jesus did a phenomenal job because, you know, this is back in the 90s and we didn't have an unlimited budget. So to figure out a way to film two people floating in space was a real puzzle. And they came up with some really simple ways for us to do it. Those suits were really tricky because we had the giant, I do remember those, the hard cases that went over our heads, and they have fans in them to keep the glass from fogging up. Mm-hmm. But the fans are noisy inside there, so you can't hear each other. So you're kind of looking at lips. And they did have a little ComTech, which is like a headphone or whatever, built into the helmet so that I could hear Roxanne talking because I couldn't hear her.
Right.
You know, we were 2 feet apart, but I couldn't hear a word she said without the microphone amplification because the fans were going. So,
Can you talk to the fans a little? Can you tell the fans a little bit about the setup of those scenes in terms of when you're in the environmental suits? Were you on stage 9? Were you on a rig? Were you on wires? How did that work?
We were on rigs. We never, I don't recall us ever being on wires.
Okay.
I think we were on sort of teeter totters that sort of had, we could stand on something. Like there was a thing that would raise us up.
Okay.
And it had a backrest kind of thing so we could get strapped in safely.
Okay.
Because it would sort of tilt. They could float us around they could move it a little side to side. And so we'd have to strap our waist into that thing and then we'd have to lift one leg up. So we'd sort of be standing on this platform, but then we'd only stand on one foot because our waist was stabilized.
Correct.
And we could lift one leg up and sort of stick it out. So it looked like there was 1 foot sort of floating
in space.
And then we'd sort of move our bodies around. So there was that rig. There was a different rig that rotated like a turntable.
Okay.
Where we floated around and that was just for above the waist stuff. So that as our body sort of floated around, we get those shots. They had a couple different rigs that we had to do. It was very slow, very time consuming. I remember these helmets were a big pain in the ass and the noise and, you know, the fan noise and hearing dialogue. It was very, very slow.
Yeah. And the times that I've worn that environmental suit, they're just not comfortable. They're painful actually to wear. It's just painful because they're so rigid. There's no flexibility whatsoever. Yeah. They're not really custom made for each Voyager actor. You know what I'm saying? They had a set number of these environmental suits and it was almost like a one size fit all. They might've had a small, a medium and a large, you know what I'm saying? And you had to hopefully fit in well to that. And, but I do want to ask you, when you were on that one rig where your back was sort of connected to that, you know, it was supported or stabilized.
Yeah.
The rig itself was doing all the movement to make
like
the
it
moves?
Did. Or maybe the camera tilted. They did have the camera on this thing that would sort of tilt. So
right. Okay.
So maybe that's what it was. Maybe it didn't. Maybe it just went up and down and then the camera floated side to side. So it made it look like we were floating, you know. But she and I were on separate things. So they would sort of, you know, I would float up and she would float down.
Oh,
and,
I see.
Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't on the same. But then when we were on the turntable, that was one rig we were both on so that we both turned around.
Yeah.
I think there were two different rigs
that we
shot on.
Yeah.
And I think it was, I feel like it was a green screen background, but it might have been, in the close-ups, it might have been a solid black.
The Starfield?
You know, Starfield.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. It was a combination of a lot of things. I know it was really, it was very tedious and very slow. And
right.
We had a lot of pages. I feel like we were up there for a couple of days.
You guys had a lot of dialogue. But the end result looked great. For the 90s, it looked very good. And for the limited really budget,
I
thought they did a good job. I really did.
And I thought the way that Jesus sort of framed some of the wide shots, so we were just down in the bottom of the corner.
Mm-hmm.
It was very unconventional for the time, you know.
Yes.
Now I think that would not be, people wouldn't think that was so different or unusual, but that was
right.
Very unusual to frame things in kind of an unconventional way like that.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. Okay, so let's jump forward to Janeway's ready room.
Mm-hmm.
This is where Janeway is questioning Seven about the accident in engineering, and Seven realizes that Janeway is suspicious of her, like many other
She's
crew
like,
members.
You see me as a threat, don't mm-hmm. you? Yeah, all she right. gets it right
she
away.
She gets it, yeah. Yep. But, you know, Seven is quite emphatic about the fact that she had nothing to do with this accident. Nothing
and she
at all.
Says, by the way, she says, there were no lies on the Borg cube. There were right. no secrets.
No deceit, yeah.
No deceit. Mm-hmm. I don't yeah. understand this. Like, right. I'm not capable of this.
Correct. And so, you know, then you start thinking, wow, so as bad as the Borg are, as much as you want to stay away from the Borg, they do have some redeeming qualities.
Some redeeming
you know?
Qualities.
Yeah, for sure.
And Seven also says to Janeway in the scene, she starts to say, you know, even though I think, you know, I've observed your crew is inefficient and they're contentious, mm-hmm. they're still capable of these surprising acts of compassion.
Yes.
Seven says.
Yes.
And she's kind of amazed by that.
Yeah.
And Janeway is really pleased that Seven is noticing humanity, that she's starting to recognize humanity.
Yes. Well, she's amazed by because of one thing. Her entire life as a Borg has always been take, take, take. Assimilation mm-hmm. is taking somebody, right?
Yeah.
And not about give. And because compassion mm-hmm. or kindness is giving of yourself to somebody else. So that's what's yeah. so shocking to this Borg now yeah. human, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So we have this scene where she's like, I did not do this. Mm-hmm. And basically they leave the scene with Janeway going, well, we still got to find out who caused this tachyon leak.
Right. Yeah.
We go back to space and Paris and B'Elanna are having a really nice conversation. Like there's nothing else yeah. for them to do. They're right. stuck. They're going to
small talk right now about the yeah. academy, space simulation, mm-hmm. spacewalks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when that ion turbulence hits them, which then compromises Tom's spacesuit, which then,
starts, yeah. yes.
And then Tor is oxygen. Tor is then gives her oxygen to share with Tom. Mm-hmm. And then she realizes her suit is damaged as well. Typically each environmental suit should have 24 hours of oxygen, but only half hour is left. And this really reminded me of the episode where Tom and Harry had the suits on and were lacking oxygen. This happens later.
Yeah.
And of course we haven't reviewed that episode yet, but it was very similar to that.
Yeah. So we go out of that scene with B'Elanna and Tom losing oxygen mm-hmm. and there's a ticking clock now.
Yeah.
Again, I thought this stuff in the spacesuits, the way it was covered by Jesus was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Marvin lit it beautifully, photographed yeah. it great.
Good I thought job
it was
to
very
Marvin.
Cinematic. It was super mm-hmm. cool.
Yep.
I love some of the reflections in the,
yes.
you'd see even in glass,
yes.
the reflections of each other in those.
Yeah, yeah.
It was super cool.
Agreed.
We go back to the ready room. Seven has found the cause. There were yep. these fluctuations in the warp power. And basically it was an accident. Seven can prove that there was no, that Seven didn't do it, that there's no bad guy here, that it was just purely an accident.
Just an accident.
And then yeah. Chakotay comes in and said they picked up this carrier wave with a Starfleet signature. And they think it's Tom and B'Elanna, but they aren't getting a response. So
right.
We know Tom and B'Elanna are running out of oxygen. Now they've picked up on their carrier wave. And we go back onto the bridge, and there's an armada of Katati ships at this point.
Mm-hmm.
There are 27 ships.
Yeah, which is probably all that's left of the Katati, right?
All so that's left.
Yeah. Everyone's
pretty,
together.
They're pretty desperate, and they're trying to blackmail us, basically.
Yeah.
With this, they've Horrible. Got the warp core
yeah.
that we had to eject.
Yeah.
And they're saying, give us food and weapons and your entire supply of thorium and give us that Borg.
Give us seven of nine. Give us
that seven of nine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only way. Otherwise, we have 27 ships. And even though we're weak, mm-hmm. we're going to fight you.
Yeah.
So, So we go back to space. And now Tom and B'Elanna are really running out of oxygen.
Yeah.
And B'Elanna says something about, you know, I can't believe the day of honor is the day that I'll die.
Yeah. Which then reminded me of the pilot episode where Harry goes, I can't believe this is my first mission. And I'm going to die. Like, yeah. So I was like, look at that.
Yeah.
So many similarities between Kim and Torres. So Paris is low. Paris is lowering.
It's over, dude.
I know. It's over. I can't take it. I don't want to take this. Oh, I can't take this standing. Okay. So Paris lowers the oxygen ratio. This is to give them more minutes, right? Yes. A few more minutes. And I love that. The description that Torres gave of what her first impression.
She used to think that he was an arrogant, self-absorbed pig.
What's the acronym for that?
ASP?
No, ASAP. Like as soon as possible.
ASAP. Yeah. And she said, now I just think you're a stubborn, domineering pig.
An SDP. I like it. ASAP.
She also says, you know, and then she catches herself. She says, there I go again. I'm pushing people away.
Yeah. She acknowledges that you're right. She acknowledges that Paris was right. Pushes them away. Yeah.
And Paris, she's starting to get very authentic here. It's a really nice scene.
Well, you're authentic too, because you actually stick up for her. You're sitting here saying, Paris, you say, you know, well, this is your way of not getting hurt. You know, this is your defense mechanism.
Yeah.
And she's just, but she totally opens up and she never sees this authenticity from Torres before this, right?
And it's super tender because he tells her, shh.
Yeah. Quiet down.
Quiet down. Stop beating yourself up.
Right.
And he goes in and we finish with him just kind of going and hugging her.
Embracing
her in the spacesuit. It's a beautiful image and very tender. And I love it. It's awesome.
Yeah. And her line, what a coward I am. It's just, you know, to be able to be so, you know,
she's very
introspective and vulnerable.
It's
and
very much
self-critical is
it's the day of honor. It's what you're supposed to do.
Look back
on your life and say, hey, how can I be better? Where have I not, you know, risen to the standards that I want for myself, the truth of who I want to be. Mm-hmm. She's actually doing the day of honor right now. She's doing it.
Yeah.
We go to the bridge. Chakotay's like, let's fight these guys. Right. Let's fight them.
But you just forgot the most important thing. Harry Kim has a line. Okay. This is where Harry Kim has a line. Okay?
Finally. Harry's been kind of quiet this episode.
Yeah. And I don't understand. Do you think Harry was trying to say, look, I don't like seven either. Let's give him seven. Because he says, maybe we need to give them something. And it's just like, so kind of like, what's, you know, I don't know what my point of view was when I was there.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I had so few lines that I didn't do enough research into the before and the after and really getting into this script, you know? So I kind of just went, blah, blah, blah. I just said it. And it didn't really come off with any type of intention.
I don't know that was necessary that you had to do any more work. I mean, I feel like he was kind of saying, yeah, we got to figure something out. We got to give them something.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe there's something, but I didn't think it was give them seven. I thought it was something else. Like what can we come up with? Because then seven offers to go.
Right. And she volunteers herself.
Yeah. And this is an important moment because Janeway says, no, you're part of this crew now. We're not, you know, you're just like us.
Yeah.
Which I think is significant that Janeway says that.
So she prepares to fight, but that's when Seven suggested, well, hold on. This might not be necessary. I can design an energy matrix that can produce thorium in large quantities because as a Borg, I have the memory that this race needs thorium to power everything.
Yeah.
And because they were assimilated, the people that have the knowledge to create thorium are now assimilated. They're gone, but she remembers everything.
But she's got it because she was part of the collective.
That's right.
And that's when Janeway's like, well, why didn't you say this before? And Seven kind of very innocently says, I've never thought of giving things away. Always. I've never thought of helping other people. Yeah. The Borg don't ever think of giving technology away, only assimilating. It's kind of what you said before.
Right, right.
So this is one of those moments where we kind of realize that Seven is growing and changing. And
well, she's reverting to her true human self, which is having an unexpected act of kindness, which is what Janeway talks about.
Yeah.
The strength of this crew and of the humanity of this crew, right?
Yeah. So we have a moment with the Katati leader where Seven is showing him the thorium generator. And
are we in the science station? I think we're in the science station.
I think we're in science station or engineering. It was hard to tell from that shot.
Yeah.
But he says, thank you. And he lets them go. He says, we're not going to fight you. We're not going to go to war. Thank
Seven
you.
Says, you're welcome to him, right?
Which yeah, was like, she says, whoa. You're welcome.
Yeah. And Janeway is very pleased after Seven walks out. Janeway realizes, it's happening.
She's had a human experience of compassion.
Yes.
And generosity and giving, not just taking. So that's great.
Yeah.
We go back out to space, and they're, Tom and B'Elanna are hugging, floating in space, running out of oxygen.
Well, Torres wakes Paris up, and Paris says, I was having a dream. So Megan asked me to ask you, what was your dream?
I was dreaming about the cookies at craft service, the peanut butter cookies
I love those peanut butter cookies. That's what Robbie Duncan McNeil was dreaming about. But what was Tom Paris dreaming about?
Tom Paris was dreaming about how much he loved B'Elanna, probably. But I was dreaming about the peanut butter cookies at craft service.
I think you were dreaming
remember
about
those. Do you remember those peanut butter cookies?
Of course. Oh, I remember my all God. The snacks at craft services. Those snacks those really were the death so of us. We'll talk about this later when we all gained weight, but the craft services and those cookies were too good to not
They had good
eat.
Peanut butter cookies.
They really
That's
did.
That's all I remember.
They really, really
That's
did.
Probably what I was dreaming
about. No, I think you were dreaming about naked Bolians. What was that crazy line you had in that one episode where Seska comes back? You talk about, I thought, you know, it's not like you were telling her about, she had kind of stood you up, right? To a dinner date or something else. And you were like, well, I was thinking, was she saying the naked Bolian line or was it you who said
remember.
That? It was very, very funny. So maybe it was a naked Bolian.
Maybe it was a naked Bolian. Could
possibly,
have been.
Possibly.
Could have been.
Yes. Go ahead.
But we're running out of oxygen. She wakes me up and she says she's got something to say to me.
Yeah.
And she says, I've been a coward about everything that really matters.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you the truth.
And also that she would die without honor. And that now that really bothers her. You know, before she didn't really care about this cultural significance, traditions of being half Klingon, but now it means something. What is the truth that she has to tell you?
She says, I love you.
And what do you say in return? Nothing.
Nothing.
Okay.
Why don't I say anything?
I don't know what you were doing. I was angry at you or your character. I'm like, what are you doing, dude? And then she even says to you, she's cueing you.
Don't
say
you have something to say?
She goes, say something. And
why
you
didn't
say,
I say it back? I just go in and hug her.
No,
I think
no,
I was
you
dying.
You, no, your line was this. She goes, say so. She goes, I love you. And she goes, you say nothing. And she says, say something. And you say, you picked a great time to tell me. That's all
you say.
And I was like,
but then you picked a great time to tell me. I'm looking at her. And then I sort of fall. We both sort of fall
you embrace.
Asleep. We embrace and we die. We're basically are out of oxygen.
Oxygen's
gone.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we get a call. Tom.
Yeah.
It's Janeway. Janeway to Tom or something.
And then
and
she
sort
says,
open my eyes.
Right. But she says, prepare to beam aboard. At which point Megan says to me, prepare as if they're busy doing something. Like what do they need to do to prepare? They're ready. Yeah. So,
yeah. What else are we going to do?
Yeah. What else are you going to do right now?
I can't believe I didn't say it back. Yeah, and then
we
beam out.
I was shocked. Yeah. Did you recall that you did say that? No,
I thought we both did.
Yeah, I did too. To be perfectly honest, I thought this was the moment of her saying "I love you" and you say "I love you" back, and now we're a couple. But you totally just kind of ghost her on that one. You're just
I kind of do. I kind of do.
Mom's the word.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Did you have a theme for this episode?
Yeah, I think the Day of Honor theme, number one, I think that's something that everybody can take time to do is just reassess their life, you know, in the last week.
That's exactly
an honest assessment
I
of your life, right? Yeah. In the last week, the last month, the last year, pick your time frame and just see, is this something that you're proud of? You know, are you happy with all the choices that you've made, right? My other theme is that everybody will have a worst day ever. Everybody will have something where when it rains, it pours, where you just can't understand. One thing after the other happens,
yeah,
that is negative, right? But because of that, the fact that everyone does have that, you have to persevere and you have to get past that and realize that this isn't somebody trying to, you know, out to get you, or this is the universe or God hating you or whatever you want to believe in. But it's truly that sometimes it just happens that way, right? And you got to roll with the flow. Yes. Go with
the
flow.
Bad days are part of life.
Exactly.
Suffering.
Yeah.
Everybody suffers in some
way.
You
got to take the bad with the good. Okay. Yeah. So that's the other theme. And then I think, I guess that's my main two themes. I had a third theme, but maybe when you're talking about elaborating your theme, I'll come.
My theme is very similar. It's about, it's kind of a day of honor theme as well.
Yeah.
I wrote down, don't be afraid of an honest look at your choices and be brave enough to do things differently in the future. And that's the thing. I mean, it's a day of honor lesson. It's like, look at yourself and what you've done in the past and be willing to try something different. Be brave. And you know, B'Elanna was brave.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it took getting close to death for her to be brave enough to be vulnerable and share her feelings and take a look at all of that. But yeah, I think that's, for me, that was that day of honor sort of lesson of looking at your life and being willing to make different decisions in the future.
Yeah. Oh, my other third theme is don't be afraid to fall in love.
Yeah.
You know, don't push people away to the point like she's pushing you away. And, you know, people always say it's better to have loved and lost than to have never loved at all. Right.
Yeah.
Then I do agree with that. Like, you have to take that chance. If it's in front of you, why not? The main reason people push people away is because it's a defense mechanism. They're afraid of the rejection that may happen. They're afraid that this relationship might go south. Right. Well, that's part of life.
Yeah.
Maybe it will go south. Maybe it won't. But you'll never know if you don't give it a chance. Right. Yeah. So give love a chance is my other theme for this one.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. Thanks.
All right. Okay.
What's next week?
Next week, I had written it down and now I've completely forgot it. Okay, here it is. Next week, our episode will be Nemesis.
Nemesis is our next episode. Okay. I thought this episode, Day of Honor, was really, really good.
Good.
This was fun to watch.
Give me a 1 to 10 rating.
I would give this a 7.5.
Nice.
Probably.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I would give this 7.5.
Yeah. I'm gonna give it a 7. I'll go a little bit lower than you.
Okay.
That's mainly because I only had 2 lines. So thank you so much for tuning in. And we'll see you next week when Robbie and I talk about Nemesis.
See you next week.